Welcome back to Head Games. We're joined by Seth Joyner, who I'm sure must be enjoying seeing Philadelphia rising back. Seth, how are you?
Doing great, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. We got Luke Jensen also with us to talk about some of the psychology and competition that he brought with him with a dad who played for the Giants. Let's start off first with the end, guys, of that Dallas-Seattle game. Here's Len Dawson.
I saw how slick it looked. And what the thing, he caught the ball, but then handling the thing. I've had a ball that they take right out of the box and hand it to me years ago, and I'd start to throw it forward, and it went backwards. I mean, it slipped right out of my hands.
That ball is the new kicker ball. They have two different kinds of balls for the quarterbacks, one for the home team, so the quarterback has it just right, one for the away team. Then you've got the kicker balls, which are less worn in, and they're much more slick. When you watch that, Seth Joyner, at the end of the game, do you think anything could be done to prepare the players that are in that situation, to prepare the holders for that? I mean, is that something that can be avoided?
I don't think so. I mean, the way that you avoid it is that you, go back to the old style. You let the kickers prep their balls the way that they like to have them prepped, and the ball comes off the sideline for that kicker, off his sideline, for that kicker when he's about to kick it. So the holder knows what he's dealing with, the snapper knows what he's dealing with, and the kicker certainly knows what he's dealing with. I don't understand this whole thing about, you know, everybody's got their own ball and you can't touch the ball
and
all this kind of stuff. I mean, you got a guy that kicked a 60-yarder and a 61 or a 62-yarder this year. What difference does it make, you know, what kind of ball that they're using?
Exactly. Luke, when you watch that, do you think this is the kind of thing that Tony Romo's going to have difficulty recovering from?
I think this is going to motivate him. You hear that a lot. A competitor wants to pick it up for his team. He is a huge disappointment. He's got two ways to go. Let it affect him over the offseason at the Pro Bowl, or he's going to be in the gym running the sprints and practicing those things that are making him better in the clutch situations. I agree with Seth on this. One of the big things I have with the NFL right now is this stinking ball issue. You go to the Super Bowl, and every single snap is a new ball for charity. Why don't they use the practice balls for charity? Every new ball has to come out for every single play. I don't mind the commercial breaks. That pays the bills. But a new ball every play? I mean, in tennis, a ball is a very big part of the game. The same in football. The quarterback can't grip it.
The same in baseball.
It comes down to performance. Why is the NFL tricking and working out things for charity when the performance is the main thing on the field right now? Auction off the game balls later.
Do you think that anybody, do you think that the fans who actually buy these ball in auctions would really know the difference between a brand new ball and a used ball? Just manufacture, you know, charity balls, you know, have guys sign them or whatever you're going to do and distribute them, auction them off, whatever it is you do. But, you know, why are you messing around with the product on the field for the sake of, you know, charities and people off the field? You know, that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
At least the NBA woke up and let the old ball come back because the players were all upset because the new balls were cracking their fingertips, it was too dry, it wasn't performing well. Let the players play at the highest level with their equipment.
Well, exactly. When you talk about performance, that's what this game is all about, and I'm all for charity, but it doesn't make sense to me. Guys, let's get a quick take on the playoffs. We talked about the Baltimore Indy game, and Seth, I wanted your take on this. I just think Baltimore is too physical right now, and even though Merrill Hodge thinks that Indy can play that game, Bob Sanders proved it. Their defense is at a better level now. They proved they can stop the run. How do you see this game?
Well, I don't know if they proved they stopped the run. I think they stepped up because they didn't want to be embarrassed in their own backyard, and yes, they might have been fueled by having Bob Sanders back. I think it's very difficult to play off of emotion, and clearly that's what they played off of last week. 2 weeks in a row, I think. But at the other end of the spectrum, you know, Steve McNair is playing some good football right now too. So all he doesn't need for Jamal Lewis to go out and rush for 200 yards. He just needs for Jamal Lewis to go out and rush for about 80 to 100 yards, and that allows him to, you know, play pass and short roll and short sprint and all of those types of things. I don't see this game as, you know, really being much of a contest because the blueprint is out there for everyone. And everyone knows that the way that you beat Indy is you get up, you beat up their wide receivers, you pick your times where you bring pressure, and you make Peyton very uncomfortable in the pocket. They're very good against the run. Indy doesn't run the ball as effectively as they have in the past, and I think that, you know, that Baltimore will basically dominate this game from not only from an offensive perspective, but from a defensive perspective as well.
By the way, Luke, you talked about the Colts coming back. You know, it's going to mean more to the Baltimore Ravens and those fans that lost their Colts team in the middle of the night many years ago. It's going to mean more to them to exact yet one more measure of revenge against the Colts.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's perfect for the fans. It's a playoff game. You know, the Colts are coming back with the black sneakers. It's fantastic. But I still say Peyton Manning, deep down, he doesn't want to go another season without an appearance in the Super Bowl. I mean, at least Marino said he went to one Super Bowl. I mean, everyone's saying, boy, Peyton, you're putting up these big numbers. But you haven't been to the big game. You haven't won the big ring. I think that's what's going to drive Indianapolis and their star.
Seth, tell us what you think about this Philly game at the Saints. The Saints playing so well, but, you know, a couple weeks off sometimes can knock you off your game.
Well, the NFC, I think, you know, the two teams that advanced last week, you know, advanced by sheer, you know, luck, so to speak. You know, I expected Philadelphia to really dominate the game a little more than what they did last week, and I just don't see them going into New Orleans, which, you know, with the fact that Chicago has all the injuries on defense and the big question mark at quarterback, I just don't see. I think that New Orleans is probably the best team in the NFC right now. I just can't, you know, I don't see Philadelphia being able to go down and win that game with all the emotion that's going to be involved with that game, and as well as they've been playing, as well as New Orleans has been playing, you know, throughout the season. I don't see them going down there beating the Saints at home.
Before we let you go, my good friend Luke Jensen, what's your surprise pick in the playoffs today?
Well, I'm going with Seth's team, the Philadelphia Eagles. Once again, I love teams with a lot to prove, and Garcia, he's got a big payday if he can come up big. No one expects him to win this game. If he goes out there and has some big numbers, he played ugly and he won against the Giants. Now he can kind of loosen it up. He's got so much to gain here if he has a big playoff run. If he can bring the Super Bowl championship to Philadelphia, he's going to get a massive contract next year. I think that's going to drive the Philadelphia Eagles. That's my surprise pick.
I think that's a great pick. Well, Luke, thanks for joining us, buddy. We'll see you next week, man. You're the best.
Bye.
ESPN and Lexus, Luke Jensen, one of a kind, not only tennis, but his father played for the Giants. We appreciate it. Tell me, Seth, about what you saw in the use of Westbrook in that game. Doesn't that say something to you that they're beginning to develop some new arsenal by you know, setting free Westbrook, who I think has been constrained earlier in the year?
Well, I think that Andy Reid has finally gotten over his ego trip. You know, first of all, he's turned the offensive play calling over to Marty Morningwood. And what Marty has done is he's balanced up the offense. Instead of trying to throw the ball three times a game, you know, they're extremely balanced. And I think that is the success of those offenses, to be balanced. And especially with a guy like Jeff Garcia, you know, you need to have balance as far as the run attack is concerned to allow him to be, you know, successful, because he's better when he's moving. He can make some plays from the pocket, but I think he's a much better quarterback, you know, when he's moving. But so when you're running the ball with some efficiency, you know, you can play pass and short roll and bootleg and do some different things to give him some run pass options. And I think that's the greatest thing, you know, that they've done. Conversely, I think Mr. Jensen is putting too much into the quarterbacks, because I just believe that if, for both of those teams, if they don't run the ball effectively, then that makes both of those quarterbacks, you know, very average. And the thing to watch this weekend is the turnover situation. Peyton Manning last week, three interceptions. If he plays against a much better team, they don't win that football
game. It's over. Listen, we gotta go to baseball for a second here, because we're lucky enough to be joined by somebody who's busy. Contract Josh Burns, you're becoming a media darling. Josh Burns, general manager for the Diamondbacks, congratulations on the acquisition of Randy Johnson.
Thanks, Nick. It was a big day for us to get Randy back, and you know, it certainly has intangible benefits to us. But most important, we think he can help us win games, so we're anxious to get him back on the mound.
How did the physical go? He says he's not 100% yet.
Well, physical went great. Shoulder, elbow, and knee were all very good, extremely good, and as he keeps himself in great shape. So I think it's just a matter of a guy who knows how to, you know, post 200 innings where he is in his throwing program, and because of the back surgery, he's a couple weeks behind. So I think we'll just monitor as we go. But, you know, it's just I think he's used to more than 3 months to condition his arm for the season. He's just a little bit behind on that.
Josh, you couldn't have predicted this at the end of the season. And a guy like Randy takes it upon himself to realize four straight Cy Youngs in Arizona where I was successful. Everyone agrees that the batters there in the National League are not going to be as challenging. The situation there is much more to his liking. What does this do to your game plan, having him back? Does this energize you and accelerate your process getting back to the playoffs?
I think we definitely have a chance. You know, I think the National League West is going to be a very good pitching division. We'll have, you know, our rotation will be very good. Barry Zito will be in this division. Jason Schmidt remains in the division. Greg Maddux will be in the division the whole year. And then there's some young pitchers coming up, and guys like, you know, Matt Cain and Chad Billingsley and our own guys. So there'll be a lot of pitching in this division. So I think it's necessary to compete, and the National League West has come a long way in 2 years from sort of the punchline to a division that is pretty good and pretty congested 1 through 5. So, you know, bottom line is I think we have a chance to win, and getting Randy only gives us a better chance.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, buddy. Congratulations, and I know everybody here in Phoenix is very excited. It's definitely a win-win for everybody concerned.
Okay, thanks a lot, Nick.
Thank you, sir. We're also joined by Jim Beattie. Jim, thanks for joining us. I thought you and Seth and I could spend a couple minutes now and in the final segment talking about the steroid situation and its effect on the Hall of Fame balloting, particularly with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Let's start with you, Jim, in 1 minute. How do you take this?
Well, I think my response to what really went on with Mark McGwire is how everybody read his actions at the Senate hearings. He did not present himself very well at all. He was not prepared with any other response than, you know, I'm not here to talk about the past. I want to talk about the future. And that got old very quickly. And I think that played on it as much as anything. Had he been a little more forthright, and I'm not saying admitting to steroid use, but he used androstenedione that wasn't illegal. And whether anybody else can kind of assume he used steroids, it hasn't been proven. And other than that, I really thought that he should have been voted in. I think he will be voted in, but I think the writers, if they can't vote for Ripken or Gwynn, and 8 didn't vote for Ripken, 13 didn't vote for Gwynn, doesn't surprise me that McGwire didn't get in.
Well, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Seth Joyner and Jim Beattie about whether this is a witch hunt, that it's a little bit out of control, given that in the time when Mark McGwire was playing, many, many other players were doing it. We'll be right back on Sports Byline. And